is Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. La Crosse is an old river town with quite the history. Beyond reading stories or studying old photographs, we're able to see and experience the buildings that went up generations before us. La Crosse has lost many of its original buildings, but some still stand. Some have become part of the city's history in its later years. Today, in a special encore edition of Newsmakers, we'll revisit three historic properties located around the La Crosse area. Many people have fond memories of seeing blockbusters like Star Wars or Jaws at the Hollywood Theater in downtown La Crosse. For many years, it was the largest movie house of its kind in the area. In the mid-90s, the venue began hosting concerts. A wide variety of acts took the stage, like Toby Keith, Arlo Guthrie, Megadeth, and the Big Woo. The Hollywood Theater is on the National Register of Historic Places. Even so, it's gone through a number of owners in the last decade. As it stands now, the theater is completely gutted, and there's major water damage. And that's only the beginning. Regardless, Phil and Julie Addis purchased the Hollywood in March and are trying to revamp it. But they have to start from scratch, eventually decorating in the original Art Deco or in the style of an old movie palace. I recently met Phil at the Hollywood to see how things are coming along.
So this is it. This is what's left of the Hollywood Theater. Not much to look at, unfortunately.
I'm wondering if you can describe what we can still see.
And if you turn around, you can see where at one point it was actually a pretty neat theater. The balcony is actually intact. Originally the theater was 1940s theater. It was an Art Deco look. Whoever the last owner was, which was a construction company out of Plain, Wisconsin, Schindler Construction, literally chiseled off everything. You can see there's one there, but they actually took the speakers out of the boxes, and they sold the back pieces, so there's nothing left inside.
And all the seats are gone as well?
All the seats are gone. There used to be 1,000 seats in this theater, and those are all gone. They were all sold. All the projection equipment is gone. Even the reels that would hold the old films are gone. They actually chiseled off. You can see there's nothing along the base anymore. All the base shoe is gone. They took all of that with them. They actually stripped it all off and sold it. It was kind of a carved metal because it was an Art Deco building, so that was a lot of metal in the building. So they literally stripped it all off and sold all of that. They actually, you can see the burn marks on the floor. They actually took the seat supports and cut those off with a blowtorch. That's where the burn marks are coming from. And you can see there's actually not even any glass in those upper windows anymore, which is where you would project the movie from. All of that's gone.
I mean, so they got every single dollar they could out of this.
Every penny they could, they got out of this place. The front of the stage, this is called a Presidium Arch. The arch used to have lights that would run, and then as the movie would start, the lights would come on, and they'd run in a track, and then they'd turn off as the movie started. They literally disconnected all those, sold it. The curtains would close. It was a red set of curtains that would open and close with the movie. All that's gone. The motor's still over there on the right-hand side. But all that's gone. The screen used to be a drop-down screen. That's obviously gone. They even sold the pulleys that ran the screen. So they, as much as they could get out of this building, they did.
So to you, is it better that everything's gone and that you can almost just start from scratch? Or do you wish that some of the older pieces were still in here?
I wish a lot of the older pieces are still in here. The seats alone. Seats in a theater are $100 a piece. I don't know what they sold these for, but yes, they were small seats. You can see the way they were spaced, probably not good for today's standard. But I could have pulled out every other row and had plenty of room, but now we've got to replace all the seats. So that's a lot of money. If they had just merely left the heat on in the building so the pipes didn't burst or drain the water pipes so they wouldn't burst, we wouldn't have as much damage as we do today. Now, interestingly enough, and I'm sure it's just because of the height, all of the blue lights, which were the lights that the movies will, when the lights will fade in and out as a movie starts, all of those still work. But everything else, you can see that none of the other lights do. And that's most likely water damage of just the water leaking and has probably short-circuited the electrical system.
So I heard rumors that the entire basement was flooded. Is that true?
The entire basement was flooded about 12 inches up. There's actually a watermark on the wall where you can see it flooded because the bathrooms were in the basement. So, and they were Art Deco bathrooms. Again, they had the very detailed glass. So when the pipes burst, it basically blew all of it out. So yeah, it all has to be redone. And they literally, there was an Art Deco metal fireplace in the basement. You can see where they chiseled that off the wall and even the mirrors that were with it. you can see impressions of what was left there. And obviously there's nothing left on the stage itself. So all of that was pretty well destroyed as much as they possibly could, again, to get everything out they could out of the building.
How do you want to use this place? What sort of entertainment do you imagine here?
Assuming we're having the building tested to be sure it's structurally sound, because if it's not, there's nothing I can do with the building, and then it'll probably just go for back taxes. And we'll just forfeit what we have into it. If it can be restored, we want to put it back to a historic movie theater and a performance venue. The stage would stay the same way it is. Again, all of that power would be taken out. We'd have to put in a more modern system. Obviously, we need seats back, bathrooms on the main floor. I would like to restore it to a performance and a movie venue. It would never compete with like a Marcus Theaters or something like that, but it would be more, you know, second-run older films, films that you don't see anymore, things that would come out of the Cannes Film Festival, things like that is what we'd hope to put here.
So why did you and your wife decide to purchase this building?
I'm not really sure why we did this. It was a,
and
it
I'm
was
sure
actually
when you...
a spur of the moment. We were reading the article in the paper. It was the day before the sheriff's sale. A friend had called and said, why don't you buy it? We said, sure, just what we need is one more building. And we ended up buying it the next day. So we didn't really want to see it torn down. We didn't really want to see it sit like this anymore. We own several other buildings downtown, and we live downtown. So this was kind of sad to see. This was important when I was growing up as a kid. My wife remembered it when she was growing up. All of our family used to come here. A friend of mine used to manage the theater. And it was just sad to see the shape it came into. So we thought we probably have one more remodel left in us. So we thought we'd try this next.
How challenging is this compared to your other remodels?
It's not the worst I've seen, actually. We've had worse. We've had better. It's not. This is a full remodel. This will be all architectural, I mean, all plumbing, all mechanical, all heating, air conditioning. That's a concern. But if the building is structurally sound, that's better than some of the others that we've engaged in. It would be nice not to have to do so much work in it, but it's going to be required.
You said that historically to you and to people that you love, this has always been an important building. But why is it important in the grand scheme of things to save the Hollywood Theater?
You know, the downtown, if you believe downtowns are important, which we do, the Fifth Avenue is one of the oldest streets in downtown. It used to be one of the main centers of commerce. If you look at the old photos, this whole street was lined with stores. JCPenney's, which is now at the mall, was just down the block from here. Herberger's, which is now at the mall, was on Fifth Avenue. The phone company, when it was owned locally, was here. There were shoe stores, furniture stores, everything else up and down this whole block was a main area for commerce of this whole region, not just La Crosse, but of the entire area, this part of Wisconsin. And then to see it run down is kind of sad, number one, but if you believe a downtown is important to a community, you need to bring these areas back up. This could be a parking lot, no doubt. You could tear it down, you could put a 30-car parking lot here, but do we really need more parking lots as opposed to buildings? As opposed to old buildings that maybe bring something to the community. The thought is that if you can restore the Hollywood Theater, and it's kind of an anchor on the corner of Fifth Avenue, that will help spur development for all these other buildings which are suffering right now. And if we can hopefully bring that back, it will help everybody else around the block.
And to restore the downtown buildings, why is it important? Why, I mean, is it more about history or is it economics?
It's not economics. I cannot tell you we've ever made any money restoring these buildings. This building will not make us any money. No matter how many years we own it, this building will cost more than we will probably ever get out of it. But you have to, again, decide if you have a duty to give back to your community. My wife and I have been very lucky. We've made a lot of money in La Crosse. My law office is here. Our restoration company is here. Our property management is here. Our buildings are here. We were married in La Crosse. We met here working for Oktoberfest as volunteers. And we think it's important to do something to give back to the city, and if you believe that, then you kind of have a duty to do what you can to help it downtown.
Phil Addis is the new owner of the Hollywood Theater in downtown La Crosse. He's recently put a new roof on the building, and if everything goes according to plan, they hope to have the Hollywood up and running by the summer. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're revisiting different historic properties in the La Crosse area. Hixson is one of the most well-known names in La Crosse. Perhaps one of the family's most lasting legacies is purchasing Granddad's Bluff, saving it from destruction, and donating the famous lookout point back to the city. Gideon Hixson was a lumber baron who in 1858 bought some property on what is now 7th Street near Western Technical College. He built the Hixson House and, with his wife, Ellen, raised 5 sons there. The Hixson House is a National Historic Landmark, and people can tour the home and imagine what life was like a century ago. Larry Green has been volunteering at the house for about 20 years. He guides me through the home. As we enter, I'm almost overwhelmed by the decor. To the left is a parlor with green Italian wallpaper and an emerald Victorian velvet sofa. On the right is Gideon Hixson's library. The walls are lined with his encyclopedias, Bibles, and travel books.
This was Mr. Hixson's lair. This is his library and his study. And over the mantel is a big picture of Gideon. That was taken in about 1890, 2 years before he died. And when he died in 1892, he was worth about $1.3 million. In today's money, that's about $25 million. So he was very wealthy. Made most of his money and then in lumber, but then he was either very lucky or very wise because he got out of the lumber business. Just it was starting to go boom in La Crosse, really big decline. And then he bought a bank here in town. He was a state legislator for 2 terms. Didn't like politics. He didn't like all the backstabbing that went along with politics. But because of his prestige in the community, he thought it was his really duty to serve in Madison.
This is beautiful.
The ornate desk here in the library is hand-carved teak wood made in China. It was a gift from Mrs. Hixson to her husband. And all the items you see on his desk were just as he left them. These are actual canceled checks, his pens. Up on top, he got a calendar, a scale, and a thermometer. And the flowers are made from carved ivory. The chandelier in this room is combination gas and electric. When the electricity came into La Crosse in the early 1890s, it was iffy. So when the electricity failed, then they could use the old gas lighting in this room. The fireplace in this room is Italian marble. When we got the house in the mid-1960s, one of the first things they had to do was restore it because somebody got the bright idea to paint it brown. And now, as you can see, the color is white marble. It's from Italy. And the lady and her daughter spent almost 2 years restoring the fireplace to as it should look forever.
Larry Green continues through the house, leading me through the dining room and a one-of-a-kind Turkish nook filled with artifacts from the Middle East. We make our way upstairs to see the bedrooms set up just as they were when the Hixson family lived there, with toys for the grandchildren and combs on the vanities. Larry then heads downstairs into the kitchen.
So here we are in the kitchen, and we're looking at the great majestic stove. This was cast in St. Louis for the Hixson family and brought upriver. And it features both gas over here and usually coal or wood over here, 2 big ovens, 2 warming ovens, and a broiler.
And can you explain the decoration on here?
Well, it's called the Great Majestic because that was the name of the ship. There's a ship on all the different panels.
Could it still work today?
It still could if we hooked up the gas. About 12 or 13 years ago, I was giving a tour, and there was an elderly lady in her maybe late 80s, and her mother used to be a cook and used to cook on this stove, and she remembered being in this kitchen as a little girl when her mother was working for the Hixson family.
You get a lot of tours coming through, maybe school field trips. Why is it important to learn about history through this building?
Well, first off, the kids love it. I would say from 3rd to 4th grade of it. A little bit younger, they probably don't get the whole thing. They get away from the classroom. I think that's part of it as well. But it's just to see things that they maybe have never seen before. And then they have a lot of questions. And I love it when they ask the questions. And sometimes they're funny. But then they listen. And it's an amazing thing. They learn a lot.
I suppose they can use their imagination more in here.
Yeah, it's like I say, they realize that everything is kind of modern, not everything is convenient. And when you talk about having to go outside, the kids, or maybe beat the rugs to get the dust off the rugs, or bring in the wood for the fires, and so they get a feel how things were, 120, 130 years ago.
And why is it important that we remember what life was like a century ago?
Well, I don't know. Somebody said a long time ago that you have to know where you've been before you can know where you're going. And I think that's part of history. You have to if you don't understand how, for one thing, you lose this appreciation of what we have today, all the modern conveniences. But it's also just a way of tracing your own family or your own community in terms of what was important and how it evolved. And I think that's pretty important.
I think it's nice being able to come here because, as you said, I mean, there's so many mansions built by the lumber barons in La Crosse through the years. And, you know, my curiosity, I'm always just wondering, oh, what's it like inside of there? So it's nice to be able to have one of these homes that can be shared with the community.
It really is. And when we had the curators in here from all over the country working on this house during the renovation, they were just amazed when they walked in this house. They had worked on presidential homes and these great mansions all around the country. And they walked in this seemingly modest home, and they fell in love with the experts. They said they'd never seen a house like this, where you walk in and virtually everything in place as it was 120 years ago. It's just phenomenal that everything stayed in place.
La Crosse is an old river town, and you know, as we've been talking about, there's so much history here. Can you talk about the draw of the history as a tourist aspect?
Well, it's one of those things. I think history is like anything else. Some people love it, some people hate it. I think it all goes back to high school. If you had good high school teachers who taught history in the proper way, then you love history. If you had those people where you just had to memorize dates and things, then history becomes a bore. But a lot of people, I think, love history. Again, it's especially older people who can relate. They can see something that they remember from their childhood in their great-grandfather's home or a great-grandmother or whatever. And then they go back and say, you know, I remember those, and I remember Grandma used to use plates just like that, you know. And so it's a learning experience, but it's also a remembrance for a lot of people.
Do a lot of people come from out of town to come visit the Hickson House, or is it more people who live within the area?
I'd say it's about 70-75% out-of-towners.
Really?
Yeah, we get people from all over the country and a lot of foreign countries as well. And, of course, then we have a lot of the students, international students at UWL. I give a lot of those tours. And they add to the house as well, because especially the kids from the Asian countries, and we have a lot of artifacts from Asia in here, and they've provided some insights on a lot of things in the rooms that I didn't know before. So I learned from them as well.
People from outside of the area, what do they know about the Hickson House, and what is it about this house that draws them here?
Well, there's a lot of people that travel around the country just visiting old homes. I remember a few years ago, I had a couple here from South Carolina driving in one of those big mobile vans, you know, where they have sleep, eat, and everything. And they had been, they figured, to over 150 different homes. So when we were through with the tour, I said, well, how did the Hickson House match up? And they looked at each other and both said without any hesitation, this was the best house they'd ever been in. And I think the local people don't realize what a gem this is. And the out-of-towners, they're more like on a vacation, so they're more sort of enthusiastic to look at things, you know, and that's part of a tourism thing. But the local people sometimes overlook it, you know.
So can you talk about the importance of historic preservation in the La Crosse area?
Okay. It's important because you have to be able to pick and choose. You can't save every building. You can't save everything. You got to pick and choose and make sure you pick the right things. Because otherwise, people are saying, we can't have this all and old and run down. Yeah, it's great, but who's going to put the money to fix that? So you got to direct your money in the right ways and be smart about it so that even the people that don't enjoy history feel like, yeah, I guess we do have to save that building. But if you're going around, save this, save this, save this, it gets to be too repetitious and people will say, we don't need to save that. So you got to be careful of what you choose and what you want to restore.
Larry Green is a tour guide at the Hickson House near downtown La Crosse. It's currently closed for the season, but will open again on Memorial Day with new hours, Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. until 2. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're revisiting different historic properties in the La Crosse area. Running through the heart of the Van Loon Wildlife Area in New Amsterdam is a road connected by bridges. 6 truss bridges, to be exact, that are more than 100 years old and on the National Register of Historic Places. You'll find them on the old McElvery Bottoms Road or the Seven Bridges Road. Nancy Hill is the board president of Friends of McElvery Road. She and I took a walk along the road as she explained its history.
And bridge number one is from 1905. This was a real highway that took people from La Crosse area to Eau Claire. It was the only way to go north. And, of course, it goes through the Black River bottoms. And so it became eventually too narrow and too low and too often flooded to maintain as a big highway.
Up until when?
1954, they brought down the big bridge over the main channel. This is a bowstring arch bridge. It's old. It's the patent was held by somebody who lived in La Crosse.
And I'm wondering if you can describe what the trusses look like.
If you were to take a bow and arrow of the old kind, you have a bow shape, and that's what these things look like. This is a double truss, so it's got four bows, and it is made of iron, and it looks rusty, and the rust protects it from further rust.
Nancy Hill and I cross the Black River into a canopy of trees. She tells me about the history of the McElvery Road bridges as we continue along the path. In 1989, the state proposed removing the bridges because they had become unsafe and they were a liability. She says people quickly organized to try and save the bridges.
The word began to get out. We had a big meeting at the town hall and town hall. We had other meetings at the bodega. We got a lot of people interested, and we eventually had 800 signatures on a petition to please rethink this. Because the money had been allocated, it had gotten through the legislature at the state level, and so it was almost a done deal. And we had wonderful help from Brian Rood and Virgil Roberts and John Meniger, who were on various sides of the political spectrum, to help get this counter proposal into legislature. And they turned it around so that the money that was going to go into destruction of the bridges came back to work on reconstruction of the bridges. And at that point, we were more or less off and running. The DNR got some of the money, and we needed to get money, and we were tremendously poor. We borrowed some money from the Preservationist Alliance. We became a 501(c). We sold buttons and caps and kept losing money on that. And finally, Mario Carlisle and I think Fred Pearson came up with the idea of talking to two nationally known wildlife artists who live around here. And from that, the idea of these wildlife prints that you may see in lots of the restaurants and in people's homes. There were two sets of four, and they would come out about one a year. And we made a lot of money on that, and we spent a lot of money. And that was pretty much how we saved the bridges. I always like to think it's artwork that saved the bridges.
Nancy Hill's group, Friends of McElvery Road, is a success story in how a group of private individuals can work together to save an historic property. We continue our walk down the Seven Bridges Road and pass bridges 2, 3, 4, and 5. Each bridge is unique in their structure and surroundings.
We've just come past the newly widened area between bridge 5 and 6. We're approaching bridge 6, which is the one that was so in the water in 1989 that I didn't think it was ever going to be resurrected. But with a lot of work and a whole lot of skill, this bridge has been put back together again, and it's the sweetest little bridge. And you go along a narrow path, and there it is.
And this is your favorite bridge.
It is, because it really gives you hope that things can be resurrected, material things.
So why is it important to save the McElvery bridges?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's important mostly for your soul, I think. It's a walkway through lowlands. It helps people get to where they wish to hunt and fish. It is a great place to walk, but important, that depends on who you ask, I guess. Once they're gone, they're not going to be redone. This is real history, This is where the wagons came. This is where the people who were pioneers came through. This is where the Civil War happened. The people came back and forth to get to water, to get to wherever they had to go. I'm not saying that there weren't any battles here. That isn't what I mean. It's during that period, it was the means of getting somewhere. And it goes back a long ways in our history in Wisconsin.
Nancy Hill is the board president of Friends of McGilvery Road. I walked with her recently along the Seven Bridges Road through the heart of the Van Loon Wildlife Area. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk with people who have an interest in preserving La Crosse's history. They'll shed some light on the state of notable properties in the Coulee region. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also now on Facebook. Like us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.